It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why, basically, I'm just gonna have a little nap and you do a podcast. Okay, go!
This podcast is supposed to be like conversational. How can I just do it by myself?
Talk to Addy.
Addy doesn't talk.
He does too.
Not in a language I understand.
That's true. Yes, get to. Oh, great. You're trying to screw with your brother while he's on my lap. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that will redo, we're going to act out an entire episode over again for you guys because it didn't get recorded. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And you know what? I don't remember.
Oh, that's just not right.
Shoot.
You already had a dry run.
Oh, wait. No, yeah, this is 310.
All right.
I didn't have a dry run on this because we didn't.
That's right. We used 309. We used the mystery
episode
for 309.
It's 310. This should be 310.
We recorded. Well, we were under the impression we were recording episode 309. It was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, the whole thing we did.
Yeah, no, like I stopped it at the end and it didn't work.
Yep.
So that's been happening a lot for those of you playing at home. So we're hoping that it was just the old version of the software we're using. So I got a newer version. That looks a little snazzier. It's still like a year old, but it's the latest version they have, and I think the latest version we were using before was like 5 years old, so that's probably better. It looks cooler, I guess. I don't know. So yeah, we missed that whole episode. And since then, I apologize if there's a lot of sniffling. I may be sick. I'm not sure yet. But I'm definitely not feeling good. It doesn't help that Trish and Addy were having a war in the bed this morning.
He was chewing the power cord!
He apparently was chewing the power cord.
That's bad.
So she was, like, dragging around. She'd drag him out here. Someplace, I think she locked him in a variety of things. kept coming back to the bed, though. So, eventually I just gave up and got up.
Persistence.
It's going to be weird today. We drew two questions in that episode, and we're going to talk about them here. Spoiler alert, they're all coffee, because of course. But we're not going to get that back. I mean, I had an opening joke in that one about how I only brushed two teeth, and I didn't use that here, so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming to terms with that, because I've made the realization that lots of groups of friends are people have conversations that they don't record and put on the internet. And that's okay.
That's okay.
So, and it's actually, I think it's good. I think we got a little in the weeds about Dragon Age.
Oh.
And maybe a little spoilery in some places.
Oh, did we?
I think we were pushing it a little bit.
Okay.
So, there's some upshots to this whole experience. Oh, that reminds me. I have something to give you before you leave. Don't let me forget that.
Okay.
Excuse me. So for you, those of you just joining us, we have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. People like yourselves write into that email address, TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, little topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. we, its equilateral servants, draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, and that's the whole show. And usually we put it on the internet, but sometimes we just say, fuck it, and do nothing. Because audacity breaks. seems to be running good this morning. Yes, I did say equilateral. You got an E word for me? I think I've used diffusive.
Because equilateral means we're the same height?
It means all of our sides are the same
length.
Yeah. So you're as tall as you are wide. You're a cube, is what I'm saying. So how has your weekend... Well, this is weird. So we've got the week that we missed.
We didn't really talk about it. Yeah.
But that, because we did talk about it, but didn't record.
Yep.
And then this is going to be another week and a half. We're doing this on a special, separate day.
Yep.
In preparation, because the night when the podcast went to crap, I was too unhappy about it. And I was like, I'm just going to be on the podcast yelling and cursing everyone. So,
well,
like usual.
And the reason we're recording early is because, as you're hearing this, it's February 16th. It's my birthday, so
I've got other
plans.
The plan had been to record two episodes that night.
Right.
And the first one died, so then, yeah, we stopped. And that's why the evil guys had to take over. And, yeah, so we've got a big history to talk about and upcoming stuff to talk about.
But as I recall, I mean, I didn't really have a lot to say. Although there was one thing I didn't mention. We watched the Netflix original series,
Santa Clarita Diet.
Clarita Diet.
How is that? I've been hearing that's interesting.
Okay. Well, it's really gross.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not usually my kind of...
It is a zombie thing.
Not usually my kind of thing. But, you know, my wife's always been into sort of horror movies and stuff. And it's comedic. It's all played for comedy and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's hard to say. I mean, we liked it. I mean, if it ever comes back, we'll probably keep watching it. But it's not something that I would necessarily like recommend to other people. But that's only because of me personally. Like, if it weren't for my wife, I wouldn't watch it.
It looks funny. I doubt, like, it's not. I would totally watch it, but it's not high enough on my list that I will watch it.
I mean, they're 25-minute episodes, and...
Yeah. And we've just been grabbing new stuff. We just got rid of Taboo.
Oh, yeah.
The Tom Hardy thing. Yeah, in fact, I tried to stop mid-episode, and then I felt bad for Trish, so we went back and watched the rest, and at the end she was like, yeah. We had been talking that we weren't that into it. Like, it's more atmospheric than anything else, and it's just not going, like, it's really slow going anywhere. And then just this last episode got way rapey in multiple places. And in fact, had a scene fairly early on that made me physically ill to my stomach. And I was just like, this is not worth it to me. So we're out on that one. We're still in on Emerald City. In fact, we just caught up yesterday. I'm not really liking Emerald City, but it's almost done, so apparently we've only got 3 episodes left.
I do like it, but here's the problem with Emerald City, and why it's probably not going to... Why it's got terrible ratings, and why it's probably...
Does it have terrible ratings?
And why it's probably going to get canceled. Okay, so there are two types of people who might enjoy this show. There are Wizard of Oz fans.
Original book,
yeah.
Wizard of Oz fans, and, which basically means you.
And there are people who are not particularly Wizard of Oz fans, but they, you know, they like fantasy genre stuff or whatever.
Well, that's me.
Okay. Now, the problem is that the only people who are really going to like this show are mostly people who are an intersection of those two things, and that's not a large group of people. I can't imagine most people on the Wizard of Oz side of the Venn diagram liking the show. And I can't really imagine a lot of general fantasy fans liking the show. Again, where it intersects, I think people could like it, but that's such a small group of people. And the reason I like it is some of the same reasons that I like it are reasons.
It'll come to him.
No. Some of the reasons I like it are the very reasons that a Wizard of Oz fan wouldn't like it, and probably some of the same reasons that a fantasy fan wouldn't like it. Like I like what's going on with the Tin Man type of character. Yeah. They've taken the Tin Man and Jack Pumpkinhead and sort of combined them. I like that, and it even goes along with the original story somewhat, because the way the Tin Man in the story becomes a Tin Man is because he's supposedly in love, but he's also kind of reckless about it. Like, okay. He's so impassioned with love that he's not really paying attention to the fact that his obsession is causing him to ultimately chop off all his limbs and turn himself into a Tin Man.
Uh-huh.
So, and that same thing happens in the show, where he does something somewhat impulsive and impetuous in his passion, and that's what ultimately leads to him becoming who he is. Right? I mean, do you recall that, or?
I absolutely recall what happened to him. I think one could say that was an homage. I mean, they're vastly different storylines.
Well, that's true.
Vastly different thing, but you could say that that's a reference to that.
Sure, but
I certainly wouldn't say it's a similar plot.
Well, no, but I think it's a clever way to do a similar thing to me. I like what's going on with Tip. There's a lot of things I like. The choices they made to, as you say, it's more of a reference and an homage kind of thing, but they do seem to be making an effort to tell the same stories or the same kind of stories, and I appreciate that a lot. The problem with it, though, is that, like, the last episode was this way. It's like a lot of things are happening, but there's not a lot of context. Some of the things they're doing don't make any sense.
They're moving really fast. Like, a lot of stuff that I thought would be way drawn out, they're just moving along. Like, I'm trying to figure out if they're gonna try and wrap up most of these storylines in this season.
Because they know they're not going to get another one.
Well, just because stories are moving really, really quickly, and TV doesn't seem to do that. Now, in a certain way, I actually appreciate that, because I'm really tired of everybody J.J. Abramsing the shit out of everything.
Right.
I get tired of saying, I've seen 7 episodes since we brought up this mystery, and we haven't had a single clue. I get really tired of that.
Well, right, but I mean, this is hurrying it along to the extent where you're skipping logical steps, so that the audience is like, wait a minute, why are they saying that? Why are they doing that? How did we get from point A to point B here? And they're just skipping a lot of things in between that just don't make any sense. But I don't know. It's too bad, because I think that the fundamentals are good for this show. I think the talent they've got lined up is good. I like the approach they're taking to the material, but the execution just isn't there. And also, as I said before, I think the audience that can appreciate it is just way too small.
Apparently God disagrees with you, because something got really dark in here. Probably should have had that lamp on, at least. I figured it was daytime. No, it's good. I don't particularly like it for none of that. That's not any of the reason I don't like it. I've gotten over the Oz bit. I was never a big fan, but it's fine. Whatever. It seems okay as a fantasy thing. The main issue I have now is, and I know this is not going to sound new coming from me, but every character sucks. I hate everyone. They're all assholes. And they're all also pretty dumb, but they're all jerks. And in particular, Dorothy. Dorothy's kind of a shit.
Okay, but
I do not like her, and I do not think she is good at anything, and I really would love it if we could just kill her off and then go on with the story without her. She kind of sucks, but they all kind of
suck.
Well,
but see, to me, there's not enough character development for you even to draw a conclusion like that. For me to, anyway. I can't...
Well, it's possible there's more to her, but everything I've seen of her is shitty.
Well, I do have to agree with you there. What little character development...
And honestly, Lucas... just dumb in a lot of ways. I mean, Lucas has some excuses. The wizard, of course, is they're purposely making him just the worst human being ever.
Yeah, he's bad.
Ev is just randomly terrible. I mean, I know we're sort of trying to humanize her, but it's not working very well. Tip and Jack are both teenagers in the worst way possible. I feel like the Witch of the West would be more annoying if she wasn't on opium, but she's pretty annoying constantly on opium. Just everyone sucks.
Yeah, I would.
Well, Glinda sucks, but Glinda's not around very often, and I kind of expect Glinda to suck a little bit.
Well,
Glinda sucks.
You're right, but the small amount of character development you get is all about showing the weaknesses of these characters.
Well, and I just
not really
like
anything sympathetic.
I shouldn't be rooting for the Beast forever, and I kind of I'm like, let's do it. Let's just fuck up all of them. We watched the second episode of Powerless. Liking that show a lot.
I didn't. We
would recommend
we
that.
We have to catch up on the second episode, but the first episode was fine.
It's hitting that same vein. I mean, it's very four color. It's very sitcom-y, but it's cute. Everybody's doing a great job. They cast it really well. And this is probably a big one to talk about. We saw the premiere of Legion.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that.
Do it.
Okay.
Because I think it's a show that you get strong opinions about. Trish apparently does not particularly like it so far. The explanation she has given is that it's definitely a show you have to pay a lot of attention to. I am really intrigued. they put a lot into it. Well, the big thing is it's Noah Hawley. It's the guy who did the Fargo TV show.
Okay.
He wrote, he directed. So there's just a lot going on. And they are really playing with the idea of what's real and what's not. Because our main character is crazy. Some pretty good performances. Aubrey Plaza, I love in this. Because I like Aubrey Plaza, but I've been kind of concerned that she has exactly one role she plays, which is the one in Parks and Rec. This is very different, and I like it. So, yeah, I'm very... This made me very excited to see where this show's going to go.
Okay.
Maybe
we'll check that out.
Still playing a lot of Dragon Age. I'm now in Skyhold.
Oh.
Wow,
that took a while.
That was weird. I could have gone even longer, but I decided to... Because I really could have, cleared out every area before I bothered to do the bit that I knew, which was crack me up. I told you in the episode, none of you guys heard, that there was a quest that looked like it would just sort of finish the game, and I knew it was too early, so I was pretty sure that was not how it was going to go down, and they totally played it that way, and I'm like, oh. I mean, I still didn't fall for it because it's too soon, but I'm like, huh, we're really acting like this game is over now. But no. They definitely didn't get my upload through
because
they brought back an old character that in my version was a woman and in this version is a man. But what cracks me up is, other than being a man, it looks an awful lot like my character. So in my head, I'm just thinking that in the 5 years she went through gender and it kind of works. Except she's also got the wrong sibling still alive and everything like that. So it doesn't really work, but... This game is really not big on its tutorial. A bunch of stuff just recently happened, and I'm like, what is this? And I had to go talk to everybody. And they didn't really explain it, but I kind of put it together. In this case, it's the specialization stuff for my character. People just, showed up, and we had a cutscene of it, but then we didn't mention them again, and they weren't even there. And I had to find them, and then they start talking to me about it. I'm like, what is happening? But now I think I've put it together. Fighting is starting to get hard for me, which it took a while, because I set it on casual. But I thought I'd go try and fight one of the dragons. That didn't work super well. And now I'm starting to see where, for this particular fight, I'm going to need these particular characters, because they've got their strengths and so forth. So. We'll see, but I'm still enjoying that quite a bit, actually. It's been a while since I've really been putting lots of hours in. I'm about 30 hours into this one. all the building and crafting stuff I get way into. We shall see how that goes down. I mentioned it in the episode None of You Will Hear. We went and saw La La Land and liked it a lot.
I like it even better now than I did then.
Apparently, Trish likes it even better now than she did then. Which I guess means, like, over time, she's remembering it better. Which usually is not what we do. Usually we leave a movie and then later we're like, eh.
Yeah.
No, it's just a solid... I mean, it's a musical. It's definitely a musical. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Twiglet has started, like, finding a little hidey hole behind this chair. And he doesn't really fit, so I don't know what his deal is. But that's his spot now. Anyway, yeah, so La La Land, it is a musical. It is definitely, to me, it's very much a love letter to Hollywood and to the concept of trying to make it in showbiz kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really well done. It's really, normally with a musical, you want some songs you like, some dances that look good, and a story that holds it together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No, this could be not a musical, and it would still be a compelling film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really made me love Emma Stone. And Ryan Gosling, but I mean, I already did. And they have incredible chemistry in it. And it's over 2 hours, which is usually a bad sign for me. But I was not bored. It did not feel long to me. So I highly recommend that movie. And Audacity's just looking so better now. It's just going normal. Not getting weird.
That's good.
I do suspect... my volume may be lower than yours.
Mm.
Like in the thing, when you talk, it gets bigger. But
oh.
It also likes to continue to fool me as though it, having a left and right channel matters, because we can't do anything about that, but okay. It's still showing me both. Sorry, I'm just babbling at this point. You got anything fun planned this week? You got your birthday.
Yeah. Right, on Thursday. And again, as people listen to this, it's my birthday, 48 years old. I don't know what we're going to do.
48, oh man.
I think we're going to, you know, the one of the stories I'm working on takes place in the Dubuque area, and there are lots of places I want to sort of visit over there for research purposes, so we might do that. I don't know, though, if we will, but that's one of the things we talked about doing. But haven't really decided yet. Now, you know, my brother's birthday is on Valentine's Day, as I often say. But I think he's out of town this week because he and his wife were going to go on a vacation, and she got sick. Well, they kind of both got sick, and so they canceled it. But that just moved it. That just moved it a few weeks down the road, and that's where they are now. So I don't know if. First of all, I think he's going to still. Be away for his birthday, and he might even be away for the weekend following, which is the time when I usually get together with the rest of my family to celebrate birthdays. So I there might not be any big family get together this month for the birthdays, but then we'll just do it in March or something.
Yeah. We are the anniversary of both our first date and our engagement is on February 15th. And we have a grand tradition of going to Devotee for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And doing that. Hopefully this year. We missed last year.
That's right, you did.
Somebody was sick, probably me.
I remember that.
Maybe it was Trish. I don't know. Sometimes Trish gets sick. I get Trish sick more. So that was it. We missed. I think that's the second one we missed. But I don't remember why we missed before. Probably the same thing. But we've got the reservation and everything, so I'm hoping. Yeah, there's not too much else going on here. Should we get to these questions? We got a lot of mileage out of them before, so. They're both from coffee. There's two of them. I don't remember which one came first. Do you?
Yeah, I do. Because I remember which one I read.
Makes sense.
Again, this is coffee. If we learn from our mistakes, why are we afraid of making them?
Alright.
Because I have such a horrible memory, I've pretty much forgotten both of these or anything that we said about them. So
nice.
That's probably a good thing.
The reason we're still afraid of making mistakes in general is because you can learn from something and still have to have your leg cut off.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We just sort of point out that mistakes can still have some pretty horrible consequences.
There can be additional consequences besides learning.
Yeah.
But this, I feel like this is the thing, at least in our society, of people are afraid to make it known that they screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to a degree, I get that. If you mess something up for someone, you know they're going to be mad. You don't want them to be mad at you, so maybe you postpone telling them, or maybe, depending on who you are, you try and make it look like it wasn't your fault or whatever. I'm not saying I approve, but I understand that. But there's just a general vibe. Maybe it's partially coming from our new exciting Cheeto president. that people want to be known as someone who doesn't ever make mistakes.
Or who's always right.
Yes.
Admitting when you're wrong is seems to be something our culture has a particular problem with.
And
I
definitely wouldn't say I'm immune to that kind of thing. But I try to be. I try and be okay with being wrong and with screwing up.
Well, I think there are consequences to, along with people being reluctant to admit when they've made a mistake or when they're wrong, there also are, in some cases, consequences that are a little bit out of balance. Like, sometimes people don't want to admit they've made a mistake or that they're wrong because the consequence of doing so is pretty dire, like, more dire than it ought to be.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, the prime example for all of this is workplace politics.
Sure, exactly, workplace
politics.
That's a huge
one. If you're in certain positions in certain companies, you can't be known to have made any mistake ever,
yeah,
or else you might get fired.
Or
but
not get promoted down the road or whatever.
I don't even know how much of that is the perception and how much of that is the reality.
Well, right.
I feel like there's a lot of times where people in certain positions feel like that's what's going to happen,
mm-hmm,
but there are other people in similar positions who don't act that way, and they're fine.
Right, but it's not just the danger of getting fired. It's also the danger of not getting a promotion. It's the danger of not having credibility when you put forth a particular idea. So when you say office politics, it's all aspects of office politics can be unfairly and in an imbalanced way impacted by a mistake you make that, you know, that ought to be just treated like, oh, you made a mistake, okay, no big deal, and you sort of move on. But there are office politics that a person will be penalized in a way that's, like, way too much, especially if the person is not white and male. I mean, that's another thing, is that, like, women and non-white people in general sometimes in workplace situations can get penalized too much. It's kind of the, well, we let a woman handle this, you know, we tried a woman and she messed it up.
Well, there
so
is the whole, yeah, you have to be twice as good to
that's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
But, I mean, I don't know. I have a problem with it. I feel like I have seen a lot of working around. I've seen a lot of people going to a lot of effort to hide mistakes that they have made or misunderstandings that they have had. And the result tends not to be that we're all fooled into thinking they didn't screw up. The
right,
result
that's right.
Is we now think they're a jackass who fobs it off on somebody else or who charges blindly ahead when it's obvious they're wrong. And that gives them a much worse reputation.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, but it doesn't
but
seem
maybe
to...
Maybe that's because they're not so worried about what those of us below them or beside them think, but what above them.
Exactly.
And I don't know what those above them
Well, to give you... But for me, the clue is that, as you just pointed out, they'll do those things. It'll give them a terrible reputation to the people who are on their level or below, but then a year later, you notice they get promoted. So, obviously, the people above them have been completely snowed by this.
Well, but if you do it just the wrong way and the people below you know what you're up to, they won't back you up. They may not even work particularly hard for you. And then that's going to look bad on you. If everybody underneath you won't work with you or
won't work very well or doesn't care if they succeed or not, because they know their boss is just going to take the credit anyway.
Well, that's one way it could work, but also if the people beneath this person don't perform, well, they can just get fired.
Yeah.
And this person will still get promoted.
And it becomes then it becomes an issue of the culture as a whole.
Yeah. Right.
If you're in a culture that's how you do it, then yeah, the people who are just being honest and open about their mistakes are probably going to be shunted to the side or kicked out.
Yeah.
If you're not in that culture, however, you're just the asshole. And I mean, I've worked at Applied, we had customers who were so bad that everyone refused to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have to have, I remember agencies that had a specific tech that was theirs, because literally that was the only person left on the team who would speak to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they had pissed off everyone else to a degree that they were like, I refuse to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you get a version of that in a corporate structure where you're the person that people will work really hard to avoid working with.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody will go to bat for you. Nobody will take a risk for you. Because you're right. There are times when somebody in that situation can do enough of a snow job, frequently if the person above them isn't that smart either,
mm-hmm.
and can get promoted. I've also seen other ones where somebody in a position of authority, suddenly there was a restructuring, and they were moved to a much lower position, or sometimes left the company.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You got to watch out for that. And yeah, I mean, I personally don't think it's worth it. I have a boss right now that, I know has my back, mm-hmm. and everybody on the team.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I know that if she's screwing up, I can go say, whoa, this is bad. You need to stop this. And I'm not saying she will just be like, oh, okay, Tony said so. But, like, we can talk about it.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Don't get me wrong, she's still the boss, and there are still times where we have disagreements, and guess who gets to win?
Sure.
But, I mean, that makes sense.
Yes, right.
A boss that I trust is not going to screw me over, and a boss that I trust and trust me enough that I can talk to them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm confident, I'm not sure everybody on my team knows it, but I'm confident anybody on my team could go talk to her. Mm. And that's what she wants.
Right.
And I love that myself, but I know that's not all that there is out there. And I've been pretty lucky with my bosses. For the most part, my bosses were pretty good at Applied. I had three of them. And okay, the newspaper, both newspapers. Yeah, let's not talk about those bosses. And then I've had a few at ACT, and I haven't had any, like, the person who was in charge of me has never been somebody that I'm like, God, these people suck.
Yeah.
But there have been a lot of people that I'm like, I'm so glad they're not my boss.
I guess my bosses have been mostly good. Some of my coworkers have been a little bit questionable sometimes.
Yeah.
All my experiences at where you and I worked were great. I didn't have any complaints there at all. But some of the
there
places
are definite
I worked
people
before,
there too that I'm like, I'm glad that person is not my boss.
But places I worked before that. Yeah, most of my bosses were okay. There was one place where I had a coworker who was pretty bad. I didn't know that. I didn't know this person was, like, stabbing me in the back.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that was going on, and eventually that led to bad things happening. But most of my experience has been okay.
Did I tell you Francisco's at ACT now?
I think I knew that somehow. Yeah. Maybe you told me.
I just ran into him the other day. He seems to be doing good.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, I like him. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of fear of, there's a social fear of making mistakes. So people are, in some cases, are loath to try something. This is, you'll see this in kids, especially once they start hitting that tween or teen years. They don't want to do something because they will look foolish.
Yeah, you'll be embarrassed.
We had my niece, when we were all together, we were just talking about this the other day. We were at my in-laws, and something, I was like, you should do that, and it's something silly, I don't know, it was like, eat your corn with a straw, or I don't know, something goofy. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. And I said, why not? She said, because it's weird.
Oh, yeah.
And pretty much the entire table was like, because Trisha's family's weird, and Trisha's family's pretty into being weird. And so we're all like, what's wrong with weird? Weird's awesome. Like, I worry when I'm not weird. But I mean, I get it. I remember being a teenager, weird would have been the worst thing ever. Like, nobody, you don't want to stand out when you're a teenager, because that's how you get picked on. The whole nature of school-time bullying is finding something unique, because if you're like everybody else, they don't have a thing they can pick on you for. So, I mean, I kind of get that when you're an adolescent, but I feel like there are a lot of people that have that sort of view. Like, oh, it'd be weird.
No.
And usually for me, that's the reason I do stuff.
Yeah,
I tried that weird Taco Bell thing that's made out of chicken on the outside.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty good, actually. Mm. It's not amazing. I mean, I could never have it again. It's fine, but it's pretty tasty. I want to try that new Georgia Golden Chicken from KFC, but I haven't had a chance yet.
My family pretty much celebrated uniqueness pretty hardcore. So, I mean, I didn't really, when I was growing up, I didn't really go through a phase of being afraid of standing out or whatever. And I was picked on, but it never occurred to me that, well, gosh, maybe I should tone things down so I won't get picked on. I just got picked on, and that was it. I didn't worry about stopping it or avoiding it or anything.
Very fatalistic child.
I seemed to only care about what my family thought, and they were okay with the way I was, so I was okay with it. So it didn't bother me that my peers, but I didn't have a lot of friends, though, obviously. I mean, if you're going to be like that, you're not going to have a lot of friends.
My family was super, thought I was awesome the way I was, and I quickly decided that they clearly just had no taste, and it was everybody else that I had to listen to.
Mm.
My mom thought I was the most handsome kid. She constantly thought every girl in the world had a secret crush on me, and would tell me about it, and yeah.
Okay, well, my parents weren't like that. I mean, they appreciated my personality and the things I was interested in and stuff like that, but if I was doing something that they thought was inappropriate or whatever, and I mean, they never put me up on a pedestal, but there were five of us, so it's like, you know, they're...
More and more, I'm starting to feel like if you and I had been, like, in the same year in school, or I mean, like, we're far enough apart that we wouldn't have really interacted in school, but no, I feel like if I had interacted with you in school, you probably would have been one of those kids that I would have picked on, because there were very few ones that were, like, lower in the hierarchy, so I could pick on them and then make myself, make myself look bigger and also distract from picking on me. There were very few of them. I'm starting to think you were one of them. Did you ever, like, paint on the back of a generic jacket with white out to try and make it look like it was a White Sox jacket?
No.
That's what one of those kids did.
Well, I remember when I was in elementary school, sometimes I would get picked on, and I knew that because I was getting picked on, this other kid wasn't getting picked on, and so I was like, okay with that. Like, okay, well, this is cool, because this kid's going to break down and cry and have a real hard time being picked on, but I'm not, so they can pick on me instead.
Holy shit, what were you, Jesus?
No,
literally no kid thought that.
Every well, I
kid
did.
Was worried about their own personal survival. And you felt a little bad when you threw another kid under the bus in order to save yourself, but you fucking did it.
You say survival. It's like, my life wasn't in danger. I mean...
Social survival.
But I wasn't worried...
Being a pariah to being ostracized.
Well, again, all I cared about was what my family thought,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, I don't know. I mean, think... Again, there were five of us kids, and we were fairly close together in age.
That can help us.
And, like, my brother Scott, who's just a year and 2 days older than me, I mean, his opinion mattered more to me than anybody else's. So,
I didn't realize that your parents were just getting busy all the time.
Well, I mean, it was, it was, I, I, was probably pretty hard on my mom. I mean, I think
did
she suffered some postpartum.
Dreams of like the house shaking at night.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
That's a good point. In Melcher Dallas, you drink or you fuck, and your parents didn't drink, so.
Okay. No, but I mean, my mom actually did suffer some severe, like, postpartum depression, you know, by being pregnant all the time.
Of kids, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't a good deal for her, I don't think at all.
Well, and I don't know. I feel like they did, but I had a lot of my friends had a bunch of siblings, and they were still. I mean, I tried to be good. I tried to be a nice kid, but especially right around 7th and 8th grade, I was just trying to survive. And if I did that over the bodies of other kids, then
well,
that would be it.
Another thing about our family was that there wasn't a huge amount of sibling rivalry, really.
That surprises me, because in my experience with a lot of siblings that are close in age, you get a lot of that.
Yeah, often you
I
do.
Didn't have that, but that's because we were so
and,
far apart.
And, I mean, that's something I realized later in life that a lot of other people deal with, but, I mean, it's not that we didn't fight, because we did, but there was never a time where, I remember anyway, any of us worrying about one kid being a favorite of a parent or whatever. I mean, even today, I think most of us would agree that, you know, certain siblings are sort of favorites of dad or, you know, mom when she was alive or whatever, and it's like, that's fine. I mean, you know, we don't care. So I always felt like I was second to my oldest brother, and I loved that. It's like, that's what I wanted to be. I didn't want to be the captain. You know, first mate, perfect for me because he's the captain. So, and the other two boys in the family, it was kind of weird because even though we were all so close in age, oldest brother and me kind of did our own thing, and then the two younger boys did their own thing, and those things never really overlapped, so we weren't really in conflict with one another. And then our sister was the youngest, and that was a whole other thing, you know, because she was a girl and she was doing girl things and liked girl things or whatever, and we could all appreciate that. There was no real competition there, so I don't know. We just got along, and if things weren't working out at school or whatever, we just didn't really care that much. Although, I think my siblings cared a little bit more about that stuff than I did. I remember, like, my oldest brother and my youngest brother, especially, coming home and being really upset about things that happened at school where they weren't fitting in or where someone was giving them a hard time.
Oh, yeah, no, I was having all that. And, of course, I had crushes I never didn't have at least one crush going. And I was not subtle or quiet about my crushes. I pined for love since I was like 3. As you talk about the favorite kid thing, as I get older, I'm starting to figure out, I think, and it may not quite be every, there may be some kids that the parents are just like, yeah, whatever. But by and large, I think most kids, their favorite in different categories.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Because, like, with me and my brother and sister, like, I can tell I'm the favorite. Like, I, who am really sort of the black sheep in some ways, am the favorite in certain ways. My sister, if gun to my head, you have to pick one favorite, it's my sister. But I think it's because my sister still lives near home. My sister does a lot for him. My sister had a kid that also is close by and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it depends on the day and what the thing is. And, yeah, like, in Trish's family, there's, like, the one that they love the most for having kids, the one that they think is the most responsible, the one that they think is being the most successful in their life, like, the one that is they get along with best just hanging out, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There's different.
You're right. I think that was true. That was true in our family, too. One of the brothers is really handy with stuff, and he's helped out around the farm and everything, and of course I've got the brother that actually had kids,
yeah,
so that's,
yeah,
that's something.
Breeding's a big one, being responsible is a big one, being successful in life is a big, like, the one who goes out and does the really cool shit.
Well, I think
wins the Nobel Prize and stuff like that.
I think the times where I might have moved to the top of the heap is I was the sibling that people knew because I performed. I was a musician and a singer and stuff. So So often my brothers, people would approach my brothers and ask, "Oh, are you Bill?" You know, because again, we were all so close in age. So
I do that a lot. I just ask people if they're Bill.
So if so, what I'm saying is, if anybody knows any of my parents' kids, they probably know me or of me. So that kind of probably helped me in that regard. I didn't really think about it until just now, but that's probably a thing. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Different circumstances create different kinds of regard or different kind of, I don't know if I call it favoritism, but you're right. Kids sort of rise to the top based on certain things.
Because that's always the constant joke, too. Like, oh, so-and-so's the favorite kid. And it comes up a lot in Trish's family. And I watch, and I'm like, you know, there are favorites. Because that's the thing. The parents are like, oh, no, we don't have favorites. I'm like, no, you do. But they tend to be categorical. Mm-hmm, like, this is this kind of favorite.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I never really thought about it like that.
And it can mean, I mean, all sorts of things. Like I said, there can be the, this is the one that I like hanging out with.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the one that I'm really proud of. And mm-hmm. this is the one, that, I mean, you're proud of all of them, but there's some that you're like, oh, that one just
did stuff. Like,
and they may be an absolute shit to hang around with for lunch, but
yeah,
it's a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, my dad would, if we were at a social function, and there was some reason for someone to go up on stage and sort of speak to the crowd or represent the family, my dad would send me up there without a hesitation because that's what I do. But, you know, like you said, who's he going to pick just to hang out with for an afternoon? Well, that's a totally different kid, you know. So yeah, that's interesting. But, I mean, that stuff's been true for as long as I can remember. It just never bothered any of us. I can't tell you why. I mean, I realize there are a lot of families where there is that rivalry, but just there wasn't for us.
You're my favorite of all of you kids to do a podcast.
You don't know that for sure.
No, I had to pick one of the siblings to do a podcast with. It would be you.
Well, that's nice.
Now, if I'm just hanging out,
you pick one of the other kids, huh? Yeah, probably my sister. You'd like her,
podcasting.
I think.
Podcasting. How about you? Yeah, we should do the other one because we're running out of time. Oh, I guess technically I read this one.
Yep, you did.
This one is from Coffee. Mm. Oh, it's this one. When will that moment come? When will that moment come when you take the risk and do what you think is right? Okay, for starters, I feel like you stole that line from Stephen Sondheim. There's no way. Nobody ever says, when will that moment come? Unless it's a song cue. Nobody ever says, when will that moment come?
I imagine the moment will come when you get over your fear of making a mistake. Maybe that's when.
Tying it together.
Maybe that's the key.
I don't know. I mean, this is a silly question, because what risk and what, when we talked about it before, both of you and I tend not to, we tend to do what we think is right.
Right.
Without a whole lot of hesitation.
Right.
And generally, we don't view it as a risk.
No.
But I mean, there can be things. I mean, the example I always put, but it's not a risk that, like I'm not a vegetarian. And I do think it would be right for me to be a vegetarian. But it's not, you know, that there's a risk. It's that bacon is delicious.
Well, maybe there's, like, in today's climate, let's say on Facebook.
You mean, like, windy and 53?
No, political climate.
So
let's say,
windy and shitty president?
Let's say there's a news article that you think is sharing some very important information.
There's a news article that I think is sharing some very important information.
Important factual information.
Factual information.
But it is information that what do I want to say? That makes the current administration look not very good. So
I can't picture this.
All right, but what I'm saying is, so you think the right thing to do is to post it on Facebook so all of your friends and family can see it and get this valuable information, but you know that it's going to cause a conflict with some of your friends and family who support the current administration and you know, they're going to call this fake news or some other ridiculous thing. So it's going to cause a conflict. And you don't want conflict, you don't want confrontation, but you do want to do this so-called, or, you know, supposed right thing. Okay. So there's a little bit
of a... Well, your entire hypothetical premise would never happen for me for a variety of reasons.
I'm not really talking about you, but...
Well, no, but I think this is the thing, because in answer to this, that's not how it plays out. And part of the reason that's not how it plays out is I don't think in terms of, is this right for me to share this information? I think, what are the consequences of me sharing this information?
Right.
And particularly in this situation, I probably don't. Not because of a risk, not because, oh, this family member will be mad, but because everybody's going to be divided into two camps, most likely. The people who already believed it, and this just makes them feel smug, and the people who don't believe it, who will continue not to believe it. So there will be no benefit to me sharing that story.
I see.
Now, but this is a broader thing. As I get older, I'm getting more and more fascinated, although this has been true for a long time, with the number of situations where it's more useful for me to shut the fuck up. This comes up a lot in life. There's a lot of things, some of which could be informative, most of which are true, but it doesn't mean that it's helpful. Weird example I had just the other day. I was testing out some... I'm setting up some SharePoint sites at work, and I'm getting the security just right. And in a lot of cases, what that means is there's a part of the site that everyone in the company should be able to access, and then there's a different part that only specific people should be able to access. So frequently, if I have this kind of situation, what I do is I instant message a friend of mine, one of many, who... I didn't mean that like I'm bragging I have a lot of friends. I'm just saying there are several people that may fall into this category where I will instant message them if they're available and have them try out both links to make sure they can get to the first one and can't get to the second one, because there's always people who aren't part of that group. And I had that just the other day with a friend where I said, hey, can you do this for me? And they said, sure. And I sent them the link and I said, just tell me what you see. Nothing. And it's been 3 or 4 minutes and I'm getting kind of tired of this. So I am a different friend and have them do it, and they do it, and I have them do the second one, and they do it, and it's all working right, and it's great. And I'm about to go back and tell the first friend, never mind, you took too long. Somebody else did. And just then they come back with the results to the first one. I considered saying, well, I don't need it anymore because somebody went fast. And I'm like, they're not going to learn a lesson from this. They're just going to feel bad. And so I was just like, thank you. That was so... I didn't bother to give them the second one because I didn't need it. But I was like, thanks. That's exactly what I needed. You're so helpful. And they're like, you're welcome. And we moved on with that. But there's a lot of things like that. I'm like, if I tell people this, will something good come out of it? Because if not, whether it's the truth or not, whether even it's important or not, doesn't really matter.
Sure. But in my hypothetical example, I'm assuming that the person posting it believes that this is going to be important and helpful information. Like,
yeah, well, which is why I said the premise wouldn't work for me, because I wouldn't believe... Well, I also don't believe posting much of anything on Facebook has any impact on anything. But,
Well, but I'm just saying, maybe it's a bad hypothetical, but I'm just talking about how in our political...
Yeah.
Situation right now, a person might feel like, well, I would do that. For example, I would go to this rally, but I don't want to explain to someone later that I went to this rally, or I don't want to be on the news because this friend will stop talking to me.
Useful. So that's so there's this political thing I could do, but it's going to let my uncle know. My uncle is very different than me. He might not want anything to do with me after that. So there is risk, but it's just a pretty easy analysis. Like, how much do I care if my uncle never speaks to me again versus what's the impact of doing whatever this thing is? And if this thing is sending my uncle an article, no, I don't bother. Even if I don't care if he disowns me, because if I don't care, it's because I know he's kind of an asshole, and this is not going to change his mind. So, but if it's a, I'm going to do a thing that might get back to him, but I consider the thing important, then it's probably not much of a risk, because I'm like, you know what, if that uncle's an asshole, too bad. This is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think the danger people feel right now about the decision to say something or not to say something is the only way things are going to change or get better is if people say things. Even if by saying them there are going to be consequences that they don't want or they don't like.
It varies. Honestly, it doesn't help issues that this is totally an actual uncle who I haven't spoken to, but I found out, like, he's a huge Trump supporter and all this other stuff. He's also in his 80s and lives very, very far away.
Mm-hmm.
So in this version, like, I already kind of don't ever want to talk to him again, just knowing his views now. If this is, say, let's switch, and it's my parents, then I can see it being a thing.
Well, some people feel like their jobs might be at risk if they speak out about specific things.
Definitely a thing. And whether it's the right thing or not, you got to think about how important it is. Because I think I've talked about this before. I loved it. I was very excited when I hit the age that I was finally old enough and adult enough that I could argue with my grandparents, that when they were spouting bullshit at the Christmas dinner table, I could call them out on it and stuff like that. But I was incredibly happy when I got old and mature enough, which was probably 10, 15 years later, that I realized I didn't need to argue with my grandparents anymore. And I think that's an important thing. There's the risk, but there's also what's the reward? Because yes, you should absolutely stand up for the important things, but sometimes you're risking it for nothing. Like, you're not benefiting. Even if you're right, like, pushing that agenda forward is not helping anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that I guess that can come into play for me sometimes. Very seldom is it particularly uncertain, though, for me. In most of those situations, when I am smart enough to stop and think about it, there are times where I just, you know, plow ahead without considering it, and that was dumb. But for the most part, if I sit down and say, okay, if I do this thing, what are the consequences, and is it worth it, the risk to me? I'm usually not that much debate in my head. It's usually kind of either like, this is damn important and I don't really care about the risk, mm. or this isn't going to have any value except making me smirk for a little while, like, and I may lose family over it.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Yeah, even if it's family I don't care about, I'm like, why do I want to put that rift out there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For nothing. Yeah, I have a hard time imagining a situation where I'm like, I really think this is important, I really think this is right, but I'm not. There's too much risk involved.
Well, I mean, I think when we talked about this before, I mentioned that it's not generally my experience that right things are risky. I mean, yeah. I think the example I used before was, you know, someone drops their wallet and you pick it up and say, hey, you dropped your wallet. I mean, that's the right thing to do. There's no risk in it, really, particularly. It's just, well, you do that and that's it.
But that's because we're in a cushy lifestyle now. I mean, if we got to start hiding Jews in our attic or whatever, that's fucking risky.
Right, but
like,
see, there's
we're in a situation where that, and don't get me wrong, we still know what the right answer, and I'm confident you and I would still do the same thing.
Sure,
but I understand the debate over that one too.
Sure, sure. Well, but that's why there's kind of this separation between things that we're morally obliged to do, and the things that we're not morally obliged to do, but it's morally laudable if we do them. There are things that, for example, again, that's a perfect example. So in Nazi Germany hiding Jews. I mean, that's the right thing to do. But at the same time, you can understand a person not doing it for, like, well, I don't want to put my family at risk or whatever. It's like running into a burning building to save people. You know that's the right thing to do, but you also understand if a person doesn't do that. It's not morally, you're not morally obliged to do it, but it is morally laudable. And So, but there's a gray area there, right? And actually, the hiding Jews thing is a good one, because it's like, okay, so you don't want to risk your family, and I understand that, but what about this family? So there's a lot of, it's a moot point really, because you can debate about it, you can converse about it, and that's really in a way where the American political spectrum is supposed to be crossing in those types of conversations. It's not the kind of conversations we're having in American politics these days, unfortunately, but those are the kind of debates, interesting and where there's some real philosophical meat there. That's where our debates are supposed to be, but we're spending too much time arguing about things that either don't really matter or we're not really being sincere about, but what's right, isn't so. It's not that hiding Jews in. It's not risky because it's right. It's just risky. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know. So it's like it's a whole different thing, really, than considering whether or not something's right or not.
Have you seen Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee movie?
No.
You should. You absolutely should.
Never seen that.
It's a hell of a film. And it's, you see it and then you feel sad because it didn't win Best Picture the year it was out. I think Out of Africa beat it, which is ironic in some weird sense. my parents loved Out of Africa. No, you should definitely see the movie. We're out of time, and okay. I feel like hell, so we should wrap it up.
Okay.
If you guys are hearing this, then you already know it was successful. But for us, this is a big moment.
Yes, we're happy.
Where we try to figure out how this is going to go. So hopefully you will hear this. And if not, well, then I never liked you guys anyway. So, but I shouldn't say that, because now they'll hear it and then they'll know. Okay, I'm not going to confess anything on this, because you might hear it. Hopefully you will. So love you guys. You're awesome.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.